Everything sounding good and looking good before you
looking good.
Hard telling, not knowing.
Yeah, let's do it.
Before you drop this cut, I'm going to try to force feed it right here and say congratulations to Jake Hill, new group Land and Ammo with longtime collaborator Rob Bailey of his. And the song is fire, and it looks like it's doing some real numbers on Spotify for the kid. Good for the man.
Cool. This is all news to me, so yeah. That's awesome.
It's a really good song, and now's where you cut like regular Jake Hill. It's pretty good.
Cool.
I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden it will all become lovely. The flower that opens in the morning light.
Step by step instructions. With that past us, we got Trevor Stone once again. How you doing, man?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate coming back.
Absolutely. Back for the second time.
Almost exactly a year, right?
Year and 3 months. I think it was March of...
Oh, is that long
March
ago?
Of last okay. year. Yeah. Kind of cool. Last time we had talked to you, you had just launched Mentation Cannabis. No one and I have differing opinions of this, but on the ride down, I listened to that episode again.
Yeah.
I loved listening to the episode. I forgot how much in there was for like actual technical, learnable, like weed knowledge.
It's cannabis. I remember that.
Well, that's what I was trying to set up my mentation weed company joke after I'm waiting. Trevor hit us on the ride down asking, or before he came down, asking what sizes we are. And I was listening to the episode, like, I hope we get Mentation Weed Company shirts.
That's he cares about this for. Podcast so much.
Mentation
shirts.
Weed Company. But to get into it, I thought kind of circling back after talking to you at the inception of a company, kind of checking back in on what that's been like, what's happened, makes a ton of sense after the collaboration that we've done twice now that Noah would know better than I, but seems to be a very popular beer for us, Mentation, using terpenes, putting it in the beer. I thought it'd be great to follow up on that, talk a little bit about the collab, and then check back in with you. So let's start with the collab. Beer was just released. Noah, from what read in the email, not really any tweaks to the recipe or anything like that, kind of stayed almost, if not exactly, the same as it had been the first time around.
I thought about the, I felt like the, there was no, plus we had some, I think we were trying to just be more economical with it. So the terpenes we had, I felt like that was about as good as it was going to get, that component. And we definitely put in our time figuring that out, which we've talked about before on here. I thought about messing with the hops, but then looked at the recipe and was like, that's exactly what I would do still. Because I couldn't even really remember. Like, usually it's like, oh, what hops were in that kind of thing? And it was like, looked at it and was like, nah, but I'm very curious how that unrolls for you. I remember for the first one, Pete was showing me like some deep Instagram comments of just kind of clearly like people coming from a different like culture primarily, mm-hmm. meaning like cannabis culture versus beer culture. And just some of the things that that they felt like were a conspiracy or an affront, or like, I don't
know. There was definitely thought there was some like backing from the Bissell brothers for Mentation. I had to clear that up with more than a few people. I was like,
so how do people
know? They're like, well, why did you do a beer with them? And I was like, they're friends of mine. It's pretty crazy concept.
They're the homies.
That's what collaborations usually are. Like, it doesn't mean they have all this deep rooted money within my company, but that definitely happened last time. Not so much this time. I think people are more familiar with it this show, so.
Do people like reach out to you? I'm trying to even think of any parallel that we would have maybe like, I don't know. It's maybe a coffee company, but usually they even there's, I don't know. That's the closest thing, but that doesn't really even hold. Are people hitting you up like that beer you made was sick or I don't know, or that beer you made sucked?
People seek it out. Like I have, you know, people from New York that are like, when's this coming down this way? And so I, I definitely get blown up about it every time it comes out. Like, hey, save me one for when I come up to Maine. I think that Crams did a good job of making sure there'll be plenty in-house for a while. So I'll just send people down here to be able to try it.
Hell yeah.
But again, we are not associated financially.
Just Sobeys. But to that point, even on my side, I've been watching Instagram numbers on my side dwindle a little bit and start to come down. And you wonder if it's something you're doing or if it's like the algorithm and all that stuff that changes. That is real. Visibility can change and this and that. But we popped up the Mentation post and got like 400 and this isn't a joke, but like 429 likes on the post after like posts around it having like 105, 113. And it just kind of hit me like, man, people get fucking excited for this beer.
Yeah, I posted, when we set up here for the release, I posted a story of just the merch table set up, you know, was no cannabis sales, just some merch on a table, and immediately my Instagram got deleted. That day when I got set up in the brewery, it was like gone.
Yeah, I remember Lucy, who runs the social media down here for the main Bissell Brothers account, was kind of giving me warnings about she was getting flagged but not deleted and had to keep kind of diluting the any mention or even like
the verbiage
mention of cannabis to not get the post flagged.
Yeah, it's brutal. Zuck doesn't like any cannabis related content whatsoever.
So that's like an interesting place to pivot, because just the branding of Mentation is just, to me, and not that I'm like analyzing this or what, but it is so striking in terms of just how much better and also usually they're kind of one in the same, better and also unique within at every little touch of the packaging. And even the from clothing, like the branding is just amazing compared to what kind of the traditional, like, you know, it's just a little hokey.
Yeah,
like,
I was literally going to use the word hokey.
Yeah, but it's like I don't use it much, but I'll use it for sure for that. So that sort of, I bring that up because it goes directly in the face of like how, where branding is almost the most effective usually is like visual pictures. Cause it's certainly effective in a store, but I don't know. It's a little different.
You're already there.
You have such a leg, a hand tied behind your back, I would think. So like how do you even operate on that side of things without. It seems silly to even talk about it like skirting anything
now.
It
really
is.
So, like, I stopped posting flower pics altogether because those would get flagged and taken down
first. The main thing you're making.
Yeah. So I tried, like, the biggest thing is like the sales is what they don't want on the platform. So it's anytime a post that had like, hey, we can do direct to patients, which is something completely legal and allowed under state law and everything. Yeah. It's like anytime like direct is in a post or to patient or sales, it's like that's the first one to go.
These keywords.
Yeah. And like I learned that using the Instagram keyboard doesn't help you because you're using their. You're typing into something that they can directly monitor
versus doing it in notes and pasting,
putting notes and, you know, posting a screenshot rather than opening up their application and typing in these keywords that are going to trigger something on their company keyboard.
Yeah.
Like I realized posts would stay up for longer if it was just a screenshot with text on it versus me typing it
actually
out.
Actually typing it into the caption.
But yeah, it's just gotten ridiculous. We're under our third account now. And like the second one, I was so good. I didn't post anything about direct or it was just shots. And then, yeah, like I said, the brewery day when we came to set up the merch table, I put like a video of the quick setup that we had down in the tasting room. And I don't know if it was like the dollar amounts on the signs on the table for the t-shirts or what, but it was like right then and there. Wow. No warning, just account was gone.
So when you're saying that, when you say flagged, you're not talking about like a person like reporting.
No,
or
it's like from,
there's an algorithm.
Yeah, yeah, it's from Instagram that's like, hey, your post was removed. If you think it was removed for incorrect reasons, you can, you know, rebuttal it or whatever.
That's probably pretty quick.
But yeah, and then there's like some sketchy Dark Mirror shit there where it's like an independent board of advisors can review this for you.
Elon tweeted a picture about that.
And it's like, no, like my 2,000 followers isn't worth like whatever counsel I go and support for this. Like
whatever robe wearing fucking idiots.
But yeah, like Bosch did a bunch of like just we just have a stockpile of media from him, so I'll like sprinkle stuff into the story. The only post on our page now is like a gummy video because it's, you know, as innocent as you can really. It's just gummies bouncing around. But
yeah,
there was it was called Broccoli Gate, and all these chefs were posting, you know, dishes that had
broccoli
in them, and they're getting flagged and removed for cannabis content. And they're like, it's literally broccoli.
I think it's safe to say that's a little too far.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just how ridiculous it is. And I talked to your brother about this, like trying to stay relevant when, like most people's main advertising platform just doesn't want you on there.
And that's
all.
Exactly why I ask. Yeah. It seems like, but it's clearly worth it enough where you have you've on your third Instagram, which is crazy.
It's like hard to not want to just give up, but you know, it's like every time it gets deleted, it's like, you know, that little spark that's like, oh, I'm coming back with a vengeance. But
100%.
No, it's just discouraging, man. Like, I just make sure, like, I do quite a few direct to patient meetups, and I always just tell people, save my number. You know, you can text me whenever you want, because who knows if this page will be up next week.
And other than that, you. Talking about tools like that, when your main advertising channel and the main way that every small business reaches their people and communicates when we're open, when we're closed, when we're having sales, what's new, what's happening, what other tools do you have or do you find yourself trying to do to reach your customers and communicate with them?
It's really just like having a good connections with vendors and storefronts that will, you know, have our products on the shelf always. And it's like a post saying, visit these 4 or 5 places to find us likely isn't getting taken down, you know? So we did a lot more direct, but now it's more wholesale and, you know, trying to keep a small but good list of vendors stocked and ready to go whenever, and that way people can hit us up and be like, where are you this week? Or it's, you know, you can go into Weed Maps, type in Mentation, and it'll show you everywhere in the state that has our products currently for sale. But it's Instagram is just like obviously the main outlet, and it's you have to, like you said, skirt around
and having those retail outlets,
weird barriers,
having those retail outlets be knowledgeable about you and your stuff and almost relying on them to do a lot of the communicating to the customer for you.
I mean, it's like, it's just like a bartender. Like they sell your...
We got our first beer parallel.
Yeah. They help sell your beer. They help sell your bud. The bud tenders are, you know, a good bud tender will be knowledgeable about everything from the strain breakdown to the, you know, different cannabinoid profiles and help sell your product for you. You know, if stuff's sitting on the shelf for too long, it's either not great or it's just not being sold properly.
Yeah.
I kind of want to get right into that, honest, because I know that at least the last time I talked to you in depth about this, it was you just by nature of where this is flying when we drop it. Obviously, we're new. You can only make so much, all that stuff. So what are you looking for? Like, how do you vet or decide to start an ingredient? Because that would be kind of... you're not just taking everyone that will sell, obviously.
Yeah.
So what process is that like for you? How do you evaluate that?
It's really just the market, you know? Like, I don't want to be in 5 dispensaries in the same town. If I could go and branch off to a different part of the state, like we recently, within the last 2 months, expanded into Bangor, like a market I didn't know anyone knew anything about us in. And like second day we were there, reorder came through and it was like, it flew. We'd love to get you back up here. Like, people are eating it up. And I'm like, cool. Like, maybe I'll take less from Southern Maine and try to start hitting these other markets that we never even thought we'd do okay in, that we end up doing great in.
Yeah.
And, just really not trying to oversaturate a single area.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like people are willing to drive for the quality, but they don't want to drive more than 20 or 30 minutes more often than not, you know? So it's like, if you can be in We have partners in Kittery and Berwick, so they handle a lot of the out-of-state traffic, you know, being right on the border. So it's like, if you can stock up there, Biddeford, a Portland or Windham area, and then, you know, kind of just work up 95 or 26, you know, the main outlets through the state, and kind of
so kind of every
choose.
30 minutes from Augusta,
yeah. Waterville, yeah. And then up to Bangor. We haven't gone north of Bangor yet, but I would love to if there's any shop owners out there that need a job.
Yeah.
I'll put you on the list for next time for sure.
To Noah, when Noah says vetting, like when you make that decision of like, okay, let's see if there's response for us there in Bangor. We're going to go into Bangor, and like, it's no, I'm sure Bangor is not an outlier either of like any new little plaza that's being built or anything that's new construction. You see the project financed by bank sign, right? Yeah. Goes first. Then you see the construction equipment, and then you see cannabis sign.
You see the green cross.
The green cross. Literally, you see the green cross. I'm sure there's a ton of that happening everywhere. But to speak to, you want to come in, you kind of only want one or two partners in a small place, that vetting kind of process that Noah talked about. What are you thinking about, and how are you choosing who your partner's going to be?
Really, it's who else they're carrying. For me, has a lot to do with it, because we are a higher price tag than a lot of other places around. Like, it's just the nature of how the company is. We haven't really put out harvest from our expansion yet, so it's like, this was all we were able to do. You know, this is kind of where the prices were. Obviously, we can get that price down with keeping overhead down and being able to produce more, but you know, the price is a little more than I'd say most people. Mm-hmm. So first of all, it's like, I know comparable brands and mm-hmm. what they're getting and what they're doing. And so if a store hits me up and they don't have any reputable brands on their list, I'm like, they're going to get sticker shock when I send them the price sheet.
Yeah.
And they're going to laugh me out of there and be like, I'm not paying this. So it's like seeing those comparative brands in the market, that's kind of like a good sign. Like the shop in Bangor, Imperial Connection, they had like all the heavy hitters on their shelf. So I'm like, okay, cool. They're willing to pay what they need to get these brands into their market. No one else up there really is doing that.
Yeah.
So it's like great partner right there.
Totally.
For I guess just like, it's crazy because when we talked to you, like, you weren't anywhere.
Yeah, no, we were about to launch. I think we had done the branding, we had printed some merch, and like our first harvest was about to come down. We had just kind of branded the grow.
Yeah.
If it was before April.
What do you mean by branded the grow?
Because I had been growing personally. I was a caregiver previously, not under a company name. You know, I had my patients that I dealt with, but we spoke a bit about it on the last episode, how the caregiver laws have changed over the last 3 or 4 years. You used to have a set number of patients.
Yep.
And you would grow their plants for them.
Yep.
You know, you'd sign your right to your medical plants over to a caregiver. So you were limited to those, you know, 5 or 6 people. And then they opened it up that you can do caregiver to caregiver sales, caregiver to dispensary sales, direct to patient sales, anyone with a med card from a list of, I think it's 16 acceptable states.
Mm-hmm.
So once they did that, then it was like, Everything opens up. You need some way to, you can't just be a name on a list, you know, you kind of have to have a brand and a logo and, you know, all the things that come along with the brand behind it all.
Yeah. And I remember a lot, you had a lot of misgivings or just kind of concerns about how that would change the dynamic with a certain, with basically who had been buying from you up to that point exclusively. Yeah. was direct medical patients. How have those sort of, not, I won't say fears, but worries or whatever, how have those been panning out since in the last 15 months?
I mean, honestly, it's gone as good as I could have hoped for it to go. We've still been selling out. Like I said, we've just sort of gotten into our expanded spot, so I'll probably have to start selling coming up here pretty soon, whereas, you know, everything now has kind of been pre-sold.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when it's coming down, you know when it'll be ready for market. But no, the market has been pretty brutal probably since end of last summer.
From saturation?
It was just like more licenses than ever, more money than ever going into grows, so more people able to come down on their price, and just getting beaten up left and right. and it's, I mean, I know everyone in the industry is feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's hard, but I feel like it's the same thing with the brewery boom.
Yeah.
You know, the bullshit always smells itself out. And it's like, if you weren't running a top tier operation to begin with, you were just like a close option, or you may, you know, like you had okay enough beer. It's like, those places aren't going to stay around forever. You know, when there's the quality will always rise to the top.
Can I back you up a tiny bit and then get into all that industry specific stuff? What you were just talking about in terms of branding the grow and making the brand that is Mentation, and to Noah's earlier point about, there's a uniqueness to it where I don't, so much of the branding, I frankly think from my little bit of weed that there's a lot of decent branding. You look at packaging in marijuana, like packaging has come a long way.
Oh,
you see
some
amazing packaging in marijuana. You see what is pretty clean branding and a big bulk of it, 50% of it. Then you've got these fringes that are god awful.
Yeah, the offshoots.
It's a laughable joke, but they are kind of like things you could imagine you could get off like the Adobe template.
Yeah.
Like none of them are unique. None of them are special. They're just kind of different ways of doing this. Here's a cross and here's a leaf and here it's like a brewery. Like here's hops and, and
there's a mash paddle.
It's a rainbow in.
when you're sitting down to brand that grow and to make the brand that will be Mentation. And I'd imagine Baxter had a lot to do with this.
All of it, yeah.
What are you guys thinking about if, and from your proximity, being part of the mix with Baxter, explain the brand and the logo for people, explain the name, and explain the brain, what you're trying to convey.
We just wanted, we didn't want anything hokey. You know, we didn't want the typical things you see. We wanted to stand out a little bit. We obviously wanted it to catch your eye. That's where the holographic in as much as possible. Like the light hits it anyway.
It's so simple, but dude,
black and holographic is like,
I love black.
Yeah. And that was my big thing. I was like, it needs to be black. It needs to be sleek. It has to be like, you know, we don't do tons of like variations of anything. It's like the font or the lettering will change strain to strain, but like I want that when you see the jar or when you see the box, it's the same.
Yeah.
Brand to brand within, or I guess you don't, we don't really call it brands in the cannabis industry like you do in beer,
but
strain to strain. Yeah. You know, the only thing that's different is the sticker, not necessarily the box, or like, you know, a beer can has different labels, or it's going to be the same. It's going to be recognizable. And how I look at it is that if you sell good packaging, people will reuse it. It's going to stay on their coffee table.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just like thrown in the trash, like a Mylar bag. Like, and in my head, how I see it is I would much rather spend the extra time and the extra money on packaging every single eighth before they go out to wholesale, for the fact that when someone is done using the whatever's in the jar, it's not going to go in the trash directly. It's going to sit on the table. It's going to sit in the corner. They're going to look at it. It's going to catch their eye, versus if you just sell wholesale in a turkey bag.
Yeah.
To these dispensaries, what happens is it goes into one of their branded Mylars.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have any of your business information on it. It's like, it's just the strain that people are remembering. So they leave the store and they're like, oh, I know I got this here. Who was the grower again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I know the strain's written on the bag and where I got it's on the bag. But like, that to me is like the most important thing, is knowing who your grower is, you know, or where it's actually coming from. So that's why to me, like, I refuse to sell deli style. This might come back to bite me in the ass if we
real quick, what do you mean deli style?
So just like in a bag,
bulk kind of, and then like,
so say you want a quarter,
you're,
or you want a half
the
ounce,
the beef,
literally a turkey bag.
Is that American Land O'Lakes?
Yeah.
Did I get the Land O'Lakes system?
You know, you go in, you want a quarter or a half ounce, they weigh it out of the big bag. It goes into their branding. It's like, it might be more wasteful or whatever. I have started offering.
Not if people are reusing the packaging.
Exactly. I have started offering larger formats for wholesale. So, you know, if you want a half ounce, you don't have to buy four jars. If you want an ounce, you don't have to buy eight jars.
Sure.
Me and Bax added a larger jar format that can do half ounces and ounces. So it's like just less waste, less cost to us to package it that way,
totally.
Less time to package it all. But yeah, it's like I watch brands that still don't put stuff in their own jars, and I'm like, you know, like you're never gonna get a foothold in the market if it's just someone else's branding on your product.
Well, be like if there was a universal beer can, and then there was a little
you'd remember
sticker
the style
that said,
"No, this is an IPA. This is a lager."
Yeah, like there's an IPA can.
Yeah,
and then there's, you know, an inch sticker on it that says Bissell Brothers. Yeah. Like, and then it could be whoever else brewer. Yeah. It's like, yeah,
so,
that's
I mean, like,
crazy
in my head,
that way.
That makes sense. Maybe I'm crazy for spending so much more on packaging and, you know, the time to do it all. But when you're building a brand, like, I feel like it's worth it.
And to your point, the brand, you've got the holographic, it's catchy. And not only the person that's maybe even not just sitting on a desk or sitting on it, like that could be used again to hold something else. Or,
exactly.
And then maybe not just that person, but buddy who comes over to roll up with you.
What was this?
Hey, what's that? You know what I mean? And
hey, that
and
start, the sun hit that. I looked at it.
Like, yeah. What was that hurt my eyes?
But all of that conversation leads me to, frankly, probably the thing I was the most naturally excited to talk about today is kind of like, how does brand loyalty exist in weed? And to,
it's cannabis,
just to,
but whatever.
In cannabis. To start with Noah first, though, like we're in beer. I'm in beer. It's my belief and experience that brand loyalty has a ton to play. A huge role to play in beer, going all the way back to like macro stuff. You had your choice. You were a PBR guy or a Miller High Life girl, or, you know, you had your beer. You're going to drink that more often than not. And then even in the world of craft beer, you have these people that at the same time that the new thing seems to be quite important, you also have like, you're a huge fan of Treehouse and you're part of, or you're a huge fan of Trillium, and you go,
they'll drink our stuff.
You'll go looking for new stuff, but you have your brewery that you rely on.
Yeah,
is that a fair characterization to you?
I mean, I think so. I fucking hide from all these people. You would be able to answer better than I would.
And I've been very curious how that plays itself out in weed. Where does brand loyalty exist and to what degree?
Oh, it's definitely huge. I mean, if you have a great product and people want it, they might try other stuff, but hopefully they come back to you if, you know, hey, something about yours is, the nose is better, the taste was better, mm-hmm. the high was better. It's all the quality, really.
Mm-hmm.
And the obviously price pays into it. There's different budgets. Everyone's on a different budget. But yeah, brand loyalty is huge. I see a lot of the same customers, you know, week in and week out, and it's always great to see them. I come from a customer service industry background, so it's like the guest interaction to me is huge. Like if I show up and I'm like frumpy and pissed off, like even if the product is great, maybe those people don't want to deal with me again because I was an asshole, you know? Like,
yeah.
So to me, it's always a shake everyone's hand, great to meet you, like thank you so much for coming out. Like I do appreciate that, you know? Like they without them I couldn't do this.
Yeah.
So it's like I have tons of appreciation for the customer and the patient, and it's I think that goes a long way. You know, I'm the one who does almost all of my direct to patient sales, still me.
Yeah.
You know, you pull up, you see me in my truck. I'm the one
new
who says,
truck as of tomorrow.
Yeah, gets out and says, "Hey, what's up?" You know, I pride myself on that. So that helps with the brand loyalty. You know, it's not just like a different delivery driver every time. It's like they see me. It's a recognizable face. They feel comfortable, hopefully.
Yeah.
So can you, because I'd assume probably a lot of people don't really know how that works. I'm kind of one of them. I've only, other than like, I guess technically illegally, you know, I bought a lot of like weed illegally from a friend, you know, the yeah. old school way.
Yeah.
The traditional market. Yeah. And then, been to storefronts.
Yeah.
But I haven't that in between zone. I'm just kind of curious of where you guys are existing percentage wise in sales, maybe, just sort of that world. Yeah. Of like this, the fact even of the idea of like effectively like a house call,
yeah.
delivery, sales. Yeah. That's crazy. So by the guy that grew it.
I yeah. think last time we talked, state law required you to do 25% retail, direct to patient. And you could only wholesale.
That's retail?
Direct to patient, like in broken down, because there's a weight limit. For any Met card holder can get 2.5 ounces at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
So anything over that is considered wholesale.
Got
you. And you need to have a resale license, a caregiver card or a dispensary license. And so then you get into the whole wholesale aspect where how the law was written, I think it's been just about a year now since they changed it, used to have to do 25% direct, which basically, like, a lot of people, if you're a one-man show, like, that's hard to put yourself out there to, like, meet people at whatever times is convenient for them. Like, you know, you can have
the old school way.
You can have shop hours, but if you're getting to that percentage point, you're like, hey, like, this much went out to whole. I sent, 10 pounds out to wholesale. So now I have to sell 3 or 4, whatever, 25% direct now.
Yeah.
That's a lot of hand-to-hand. A lot of transactions.
Back to me at the 2.5 ounces.
And that's if someone's maxing out, right. Most people are like,
that's if everyone's buying 5 cases.
Yeah. It's like most people want to spend $100 to get them through the week or whatever, whatever different people are. So getting rid of that to be able to go straight to wholesale was, now you can do 100% wholesale.
Hell yeah.
So that was huge. And for a while, that's what I did. We were in the middle of our build out. I was still working at High Roller. So like I didn't have weekends or time to even think about meeting people direct. So when they got rid of that, it was like, great. We can focus on these partners that we work with and shops. And now it's like the shops are really our advertising. We don't have an advertising budget. We don't, we're not putting
You're
up,
wearing some.
Yeah. I mean, that, yeah, for real. Merch. Yeah.
And a lot of jars and on wholesale. A lot of tables.
But yeah, that's just what it is. And like, so people, you want to go try something new. It's just, you go to a store, you see something, or the bud tender tells you like, hey, this has been moving well. If you want something new, try this. And then to me, that's advertising. Cause like, obviously we take a hit selling wholesale versus if we broke it down and sold everything direct, but in my eyes that's our advertising budget. We're not going to get into that many people's hands unless we're on those shelves.
Yeah.
And people go in, they'll spend $30-$40 on an eighth to try it. They'll be like, hey, this was great, I don't want to go spend the shop pricing for 2 ounces of this. So then that's when the DM comes in, do you do direct to patient sales? It's kind of how it is. And then it's like, cool, make people send over their credentials, get the ID and the med card, and then send out the menu.
Do they put a cap on what you can do direct to?
Not for in-state. In-state's 2.5 ounces a day. Out of state is 2.5 ounces every 2 weeks.
Gotcha.
Yep.
So there is a, you can do 2.5 ounces direct in general or direct to a specific person?
Each person.
Yeah.
Are so there really a lot no of people smoking 2.5 ounces in a day?
No, probably no. Not.
I was like, that cap just seems so high to me that I was like, maybe it's I'm really underestimating.
Like if you want to only go out once a month, hey, I'm going to stock up. Or, if you're coming up from Massachusetts or New York or New Hampshire, like.
It wasn't designed with the day part.
That makes
sense.
But that, to all those things you said, that's what makes the kind of the brand loyalty, that stuff, so interesting to me. And when Noah talks about like getting it from a friend, this is an industry that has like been birthed that came from like literally you had a dealer or even in the more structured sense, you had a caregiver. Mm-hmm. You had like a singular person for the most part that would facilitate all your cannabis needs and your consumption. And then all of a sudden, kind of in a relatively short period of time, it's like, you walk into a store and you have all these options on a shelf and all these different colors and these different strains and the kind of the way that you acquire this product, the way you buy it has kind of completely changed.
Yeah.
And where it kind of lives in terms of who can take advantage of that and kind of build their name within that. It seems to be a very fun, interesting time to see what works, what doesn't, who's doing what, and frankly, why does mentation stuff fly? Long and short, you know what I mean?
It seems like there would obviously be a lot of appeal to having your own shop.
But
it also seems like it would be just, I mean, a tasting room doesn't really count because, I don't know, you people are hanging out there. It's just different where it seems like not even the margin would be tighter. It'd be a tighter window that you could kill that where you're just selling your own product in a location that people then exclusively have to come to. What are you guys thinking about that?
Well, the property that we just purchased, there's a one dispensary in the town that's grandfathered in. So other than that, we're not capable of...
In a town called Green. Like, you know, I mean,
that's got to be at least a two dispensary
yeah.
town.
Yeah, we're not able to. I'm honestly like so focused on the build out of the production side right now that I couldn't even think about doing a dispensary build and staffing and doing all that. Nor do we have enough product to stock the shelves.
Uh-huh. Gotcha.
And that's really it. Like, I don't want to put myself in a position where I hire all this staff, we sell out in... You know, however many days, and then I'm like, hey, bud,
you want to buy a t-shirt?
Yeah, you don't have to come to work for 2 weeks. The harvest won't be done. And so then at that point, you're taking in product from other people, and then that's a whole other game. And it's like, not really a game that I want to play.
Yeah, right, right.
If we were got to the point where we had enough Mentation product to keep a store open, you know, 5 or 7 days a week, whatever it was, absolutely.
Cool.
I'm there's a few other larger format grows in the town we're in now. I'm hoping someone with a little bit deeper pockets than me is, you know, tries to get that lobbying process going and getting that changed, because our property has, you know, would make a perfect dispensary. The office out front has parking spots. You could pull right up and, you know, we could be able to serve people right out of there.
Cool.
Are there a lot of examples in the state of grows that have their own dispensary?
Yeah, absolutely. Even locally here.
Do they tend to be?
Two or three just in Portland or South Portland. And I mean, the thing that makes the most sense is it's one set of bills.
Yeah,
it's like you don't have to have another lease for just to retail stuff at. You know, it's like at your warehouse, it's at wherever. You know, it might not be the prettiest show, but it's
usually they're not.
To me, like, what makes sense is it's one set of bills.
Yeah.
It's not a whole separate entity.
And then it's like the brewery thing of like you're going to the place. Usually you can literally just, it's super aromatic. I'm thinking of this one in Kanduskeg that frankly I have not gone back to. but it's what exactly what you're talking about. Kind of hobbled together a little bit, but it was like, what's the risk of having this?
Yeah.
Like the grow's right behind this wall. Yeah. So to just put a little, you know, just throw some stuff in jars and have a cash register there. Pretty no-brainer.
Yeah, you can do by appointment only. Call this number when you pull up. You know, it's not like you have to pay someone to sit at the counter 12 hours a day.
Totally.
Like,
true.
Hey, I'm going to be here working from these hours anyway. Call me if you want. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to transition to that way if, you know, the town would be willing to go that route. Also, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's
on a main route.
It's on a main route, but like it's kind of up there. Like you got to be going to somewhere to drive by it. Like that's why the southern main spots go through, you know, probably twice as much in York County compared to like any county north of, you know, York or a little more north or Cumberland. I mean, because just the traffic, the population density, the out of staters are like right over the line.
I heard they really like Maine stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you, real quick, small question. How do you eat, like, for Bangor or any of these? How does the product get to the place? Is that you or?
Yeah, either delivery. Like I set it up the other day that, you know, I got the order place. I was like, cool, I'll bring it to you. Excuse to do lunch with Maddie while I'm up in the air. You know, like I made a day out of it. Went up and, you know, did lunch, saw some friends and
checked out
a couple spots I'd wanted to. And that most places have, like, that are out of the way, they have drivers or they have a meat spot, you know, an employee that lives somewhere in between that you can go and get it to.
Cool.
But yeah, for like the Bangor example, I've gone up there and they've also sent someone down here to pick it up. So.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Cause
that's interesting.
I think about it as we've, this is kind of a kickback to what we were talking about real early on here, but how, like, you were talking about how things were just, Bangor was killing it kind of by surprise to you. And
it's just a smaller market, you know?
Exactly.
Like it's not nearly as much of a population as around here.
Bangor, like, I'm from that area. Like, even as silly as it is, it's not exotic, isn't the right word from southern Maine, but if it's not prevalent, like, most of the people that are probably scarfing that up have either traveled to Portland that's to get what it is. Yeah, or they, heard about it. Because
you always
really
have
want,
to come to Portland for something.
Right.
Yeah. Within,
right.
Within the course of a year, if you live up that way, like there's some reason you probably have to come
yeah.
down.
Yeah. And after we had lunch, I told a bunch of people. And so that's and, why. Yeah.
If you're going to come down here and you're a connoisseur, you're going to go to a handful of spots that you know will have so-and-so on the shelf, or they just got a drop of this that you know, yeah. isn't making it north of Lewiston or whatever. So, you know, just like beer people seek out whatever they want.
Well, that's why I'm curious thing. About it. Cause like we've had, it's been,
the people in line at Treehouse, most of them aren't from Massachusetts,
right,
you know,
yeah,
like
right.
it's that type of thing. Like,
are those groups functioning, very much in the same way that it is with craft beer, where there's like, is there trading that happens? Is there Facebook groups? And when I hear
trading,
Justin,
interesting.
There's Reddit.
And that's how I
sure.
hear Justin
yeah, yeah.
talk about.
I try to stay away from that pit. Luckily, like I haven't read too much bad stuff mm-hmm. about myself on there. For the most part, it's been praised. But yeah, it's a deep hole of negativity and a lot of bashing that goes on there.
Really?
Some of my friends included, like not doing the bashing, but that have been getting bashed.
Yeah.
It's like, I just try not to log on.
Yeah.
You know, like better. It's like reading the comments if you're a celebrity.
Totally.
Like
you're just
gonna,
a comment
you're
only
gonna,
site.
Yeah.
Is
what you're
going to
see. You're going to see something
comments.
That's going to piss you off whether you wanted to or not.
Yeah.
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 I try to stay away from it. Yeah. There's like a Reddit main trees. And that's where a lot of the out-of-state people, like, you know, you're coming up here for vacation, you have your med card, like...
You want to scope out
yeah,
what the
Yeah, you
good,
hit main trees,
is.
You see what people are posting, what's been going, what cool. batch was... Hey, this last batch is so and so was the
was
best
better.
It's ever been. Or like, hey, this person's oh. last batch has fallen off. Maybe
so. That's
try
a big thing.
The
batches,
exactly. I feel like with cannabis more so than beer, your SOPs in beer, I feel like are
it's a factory.
Yeah,
yeah.
It really is, and like it's not as weather dependent.
Yeah,
we're in Maine. I mean, anywhere you're fighting the elements, and if you have a good facility, then like it shouldn't matter. But like if it's 90-95% humidity outside, like inside's pretty humid too.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
your
yeah.
machinery can only work so hard
yeah.
to cool the building or to keep the relative humidity. So it's like year or season to season, batches can definitely vary. And then like the biggest thing for me personally is the drying and the curing process.
Okay.
And your dry room, if you harvest in December and there's heat on in the building, it's going to yeah. be pretty dry.
Yeah.
Your stuff's going to dry too quick. It's going to be brittle. The outside leaves will dry before the inside of the nug dries. So then when you get it into a jar in a enclosed place, that moisture starts to come back out. It tastes kind of mildewy. Like it's not ideal. You try to dry in July when it's 100% humidity outside here. Like it's going to take 10 more days, maybe, you know, 8 more
no
days
shit.
Than it did if there was a heater on in the build. You know, like there's so many different things that go
is
into
that sweet
that.
Spot in between those or
I,
what do you I know
fall,
nothing about drying.
The fall is great because
uh-huh.
like you know the spring's pretty wet.
Everything else is getting dry.
Yeah,
so,
the spring's
know.
Pretty wet. Like fall is pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Winter's tough because like it really depends on your facility.
So yeah. how do you remedy that in your facility specifically? Like what?
Humidifiers in the winter.
Yeah.
Keeping it more humid. You know, in the summertime, you're worried about mold and all
yeah.
that with how humid it is. So you're like, okay, I got to keep this below 60% humidity or
uh-huh.
you can have mold blooms. You can have anything. And then it's like you send that off for testing and it doesn't pass. So it's like all of that was for nothing.
Like legally doesn't pass. Where
in medical, there isn't a... it's not legal or you're not required to test your products,
okay.
but we send everything out for testing just for like my peace of mind.
Totally.
I don't want to be smoking mold. I don't want
sure.
other people
yeah.
To,
yeah.
especially medical patients to be smoking mold and getting sick. So we send a sample of everything dry out.
Cool. I'm just, all these beer parallels now are going through my, cause you are at such a different place now with
then
like
we,
even the ability to control these things
yeah.
a lot better. For drying, like, is that sort of, a signature kind of thumbprint of a grower?
I mean,
you
can
say?
Tell if someone dried something too fast.
Okay, so you can
like
tell
if
it's
open,
bad.
Yeah, if I open a jar and you can feel it, you can smell it is usually the thing. Like, you can lose all of your terpene profiles if you dry in too hot of an area. So it's like all the work that you just did for, you know, 60, however long it takes for a flowering cycle, let alone the vegetative cycle as well. You can ruin that all in a week. If you, it's too hot or it's too dry, like that, all that stuff can just deteriorate. You know, if there's direct light when it's drying, you want a dark, cool place, humidity between 55 and 60, you know, let it ride until the stems are snapping. You're able to easily break some nugs off of the branch. But yeah, that is kind of like, there's 100 places you can put your thumb your stamp onto something in your grow. But drying more than anything I've realized over the years is like one of the most important. It's where all your hard work can go to shit.
All the rest was for naught, even if you did everything right all the way along the process.
It's too humid. If you get mold or if you get, it just doesn't dry out. It's like, the drying and the curing process to me now is like what I spend most of my time trying to dial in. And like you're battling the elements. That's all it really is. It's all the temperature and the humidity.
No shit.
The parallel, it almost seems like it would be oxygen, because that is certainly as we've grown and every other brewer is the same way. Like that's the thing you go start to look for, because it's minute increments that matter for one. And it also like directly then it's all about shelf life. I guess really that's kind of a very, very classic roundabout shitty way to ask you. You had mentioned like talking about batches. It made me think of like vintages and beer is a huge thing. I'll first ask, what is sort of your, like we say, like for, it depends on the beer, but like it might be 6 weeks, it might be 2 months, it might be as sort of like a recommended shelf life. A, what is that for you? And then B, is there room to sort of do verticals and shit like that people do with vintages of beer or wine or what have you?
It's all on how something is stored.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it's in a jar in a cool, dark place, your shelf life is could be double if it's in the glove box of your car. You know, like it all
sounds
really
like beer.
It all really depends on where it is. Like if it's,
I always have beer in my glove box. So I mean,
always ready to go. If you're in a jar, if it's in a jar and they make like little Bovita packs now that will control the humidity, they're like a two-way humidity pack. So if it's if it's too wet, it'll, you know, dry it out. If it's not dry enough, it has, I don't know what's in it that it releases
like,
it back into
similar
the air.
To those little like salt packets they'd put in with shit.
Exactly.
They
to you. It's something like that. It feels like a little gel kind of.
Yeah,
and when it dries out, it gets like crystal. Like you can feel the like kind of rocks inside of it when it's like, you know, that's how you know it's, it's spent. But with one of those in a jar and, you know, you can burp it and kind of like let some fresh air into the jar every now and then. But same with beer, like oxygen's the killer.
Yeah.
If it's just left out on a table or light is really bad too. That's when you'll see, like when you see weed that's like yellowing, it's probably was just in a clear jar on a shelf.
Oh
just,
yeah. That's the classic
dying.
Cookie jar. Dude.
Yeah. Just dying. So I mean, a good shelf life, if you're storing or trying to consume it, you know, on just a consumer's basis, like 2 to 3 months, you should still be able to get the, you know, harvest week quality. After the 3 month mark, it falls off. But again, that all goes back to what you did to it.
Can it at any time get better in that state?
Yeah, absolutely.
I had a buddy back when young days selling weed, shit like that. And
when the pallets were great for weed.
But we'd get a couple pounds of weed and he'd pick like his biggest, best nug out of the whole thing. And we had these huge mason jars. He called it his crystal fuck jar. And he'd put it in. He'd treat it well. It'd be in a space up in a shelf, dark, all this stuff. But he would swear that we'd like take them out on special occasions and smoke them, and he'd swear that they get we'd call it crystal fuck. The longer it would go in those jars, and it wouldn't be something we kept for years.
Yeah.
It'd be just like you said, a few months, you'd get a big stock up, and then you'd start smoking it. He would swear it got more crystallized. Is there...
I don't know about that necessarily. Yeah, that's like a fun
thing. I think anything called crystal fuck, yeah, probably you don't need to trust it.
Different plant compounds break down over time. So more different things get released, and more chlorophyll will break down from a plant. It'll taste more planty the longer you let it go, but again, it all goes back to what you're doing to it.
Yeah,
if it's stored great, like, yeah, I have stuff on my shelf that's probably 6 months old just because, like, I either didn't get around to smoking it, I forgot about it, it wasn't a strain that I necessarily wanted to smoke. But same thing, like, someone comes over, I'm like, oh, smell this, try this, and I pop the jar open, I'm like, oh yeah, that is still in great shape, like, let's roll one of these up, and then the flavor can change. It all really depends on what's breaking down in the plant.
Gotcha. Yeah, which is just exactly real what's cool happening in beer. Anything
beer's a little more living, though, you know, like, beer's still alive through its whole life process, so there's things that can change where weed is, it's dead. Been dead.
Yeah,
so it's how well you can, I guess, like, preserve the dead.
Yeah.
Versus
how beer, much necromancy can you really do, you know?
Beer can still, I feel like, can go array because if there's yeast or sugar or whatever, it can still change.
Yeah, and I think of it because it's like, what's happening? It's things are breaking down, and it seems like when things break down, when you're talking about flour, there's not a very high probability that it breaks down, and then sort of you peel back that layer of the onion and there's something cool underneath that, which is in the best cases how beer and wine works, as things are literally breaking down, but it's breaking down into other components that then sometimes are better than you could get otherwise, but makes total sense. I guess sort of moving into that, seems like an obvious place to then talk about how you guys have scaled, and then clearly you're starting to think about, well, I don't know if you're thinking about it more or not, but I'm sure you will continue to have to think about things like that more. As soon as any business matures, like, you don't, as you said, you don't have the guaranteed, the sale is not already done when you grow. So, like, just kind of walk us through. If I remember right, I think you were only doing GMO. How has the grow scaled? Is an actual company, is that even the right thing to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. We're a company, so I didn't want to be offensive.
We're incorporated.
Well, I know you are now. I didn't know if that was offensive from before, like, now that you're an actual grower.
No, you're didn't fair mean in like saying that. We had just, when we talked before, we had just hired on our first employee who's still with us. Shout out Tucker.
He's so dedicated. He lives
on the property.
Grow.
Yeah, he is. We wouldn't be anything without him, really. And, like, building a good team, I feel like, has been so important for my mental health and everything. Having someone that I can rely on, I bounce everything off of that dude.
Fuck,
you know, any idea I have, I'm like, tell me I'm stupid. Oh, but I've been thinking about doing this. You know, like, I just, sometimes you just need someone to say, yeah, you're fucking stupid.
Give me all the reasons.
Because sometimes my brain, you know, it can get going. And then it's like,
when you don't have enough GMO,
need someone to reel me back. But no, yeah, when we had met before, we were very new. We were definitely a company, but we were in the beginning days. Now, you know, what, 15, 16 months later or so, I think it's probably one of the craziest years a business could have in 1 year, where we are now versus where we are then. But I don't really know any other way to live than just go all in on everything. When we talked before, I was still at High Roller, didn't have any intentions of leaving there.
Yeah.
And then it just got to the point, you know, where I was doing High Roller events and, you know, meetings and whatever, and my phone would blow up with a question or an issue. And it finally got to the point where I was like, I'm not able to give my employee the time he needs. It's not fair to him to have to work for someone who's so preoccupied by something else.
Yeah. Was that hard to do? To leave
High
Roller?
It sucked. Like, those are all my best friends. Yeah. And, like, the job is fun. Yeah. It's a fun job. It was a great paying job. Like, I could book whatever events I wanted. I basically was able to field, you know, if something was cool, we could go and do it. If I didn't think something was going to work, like, hey, no pressure to say no to this.
Yeah.
You know, we were kind of getting into that groove where it's like, we can only we can set the minimums for the weddings that we're only doing the high ticket stuff. So it's worth it on a Saturday, you know, and you're not spreading yourself too thin for not enough, you know,
yeah,
on the back end.
Can I ask when you're in that special environment, and frankly, I feel that I've found that when, I mean, we do a podcast together, like I've found people to
your
work
people.
With that
yeah.
are my people and I fucking love them. Yeah. When you have all those reasons in the time that make it very hard to leave and all of the things that you think about, but on the other side, you have this thing that's going for yourself and you, the most important thing in your life is yourself.
Mr. Selfish.
A year later, looking back on all that, can you just kind of introspect any of the difference of like what you were thinking about then versus what you feel now having actually made that leap?
I couldn't believe I was doing both, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like I was stretching myself pretty thin and I guess at the time didn't really even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tough leaving because it's like there goes my health insurance, my steady income, like a great job.
Yeah.
It was like a big decision with me and my wife to be like, is this what I really want to do? But I didn't start to have like resentment. I don't think that's the right word, but I started to get annoyed. Like anytime I'd have to do something for High Roller and I felt like my business was taking the back burner, I was like, this sucks. Like,
wow. that's incredible.
Sucks. And it's like, those were all my best friend, my people.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to let those feelings get bigger. You know, I didn't want to get to the resentment point where like, I hate this. I hate having to come here. And that was, to me, was the sign, like, it's time.
Yeah.
It's time to call it. And
incredibly well put.
Yeah. And that's what I had to do. You know, I sat them down. I gave them a year notice, which is probably
the longest notice in history.
But like with the position I was in, it was, it was a commission based income. So I was thinking I booked all these events anyway. Booking the events was the hard part.
Of course.
Yeah. Executing them and working the day of, that was the fun and the easy part. So I kind of felt like I need to cash in on all these events that I had already booked. Anything that gets booked from here on out can be, you know, whoever comes in. And then slowly after doing my last summer, I think COVID made, not like in that industry, you're used to dealing with bridezillas and, you know, crazy customers and stuff, but like people just started getting extra, really to the point where it's like, I don't know, I turned 30. I was like, I don't know if I can just like do this face to face, like, and put on the server smile every day anymore. And it was the first time in my life that was hard for me to do that.
Yeah.
And then it's like, holy shit. Like,
so I remember having the conversation with Noah. I think it was right at the beginning of COVID. Frankly, I'm not there. I'm not there anymore. It's a little different than it used to be. But I remember talking to Noah about that. Like, I felt like I had to put it on this weekend.
Oh, yeah. More than ever. But in like, not just that, but the
feeling.
People were more brutal than ever. Like, got to the point where I was like, enough is kind of enough. I need to focus on me. I'm, you know, entering a different chapter of my life. It was a great, fun, awesome experience. I wouldn't give those days for anything, frankly. Yeah.
And I remember
still my best friends, one of my business partners now, you know, like,
yeah,
those are my people, but, it was time and I knew it was time. I didn't want it to get dragged out. I didn't want to be miserable. Mm-hmm. So I gave basically like a May to May. I was like, this is my last season. I'll get through all my fall event. Cause people book weddings a year out is a small amount of time to book a wedding.
Yeah.
What?
You know, people do 2 years.
And you can't even have him do it. So
I was like, I'll see through my season. I'll see through my commission, blah, blah, blah. And then by like September, I was burnt doing that one wedding season already. I was like, I can't see me doing this through the winter. And that's like more when you have to find stuff to do. Even so, some might say the job's more fun. Because you're not doing the private events. It's like you can pick and choose the festivals and the breweries and all that stuff is happening again. But I was just burnt. I was like ready to focus on me. And so I sat them down at probably like mid-August. And I was like, I'll roll through October. And my last event was Snallygaster in D.C. And we went out with a bang, got a nice Airbnb. The crew went down to that and we sent it off real well down there. But coming back first week of work just fermentation, I was like, how was I doing both? How was my brain wrapping it around everything? but now a year in, it's consumed me fully, which it kind of always was, but I wasn't allowing it to be.
Right. Like, I think of it when you're doing, when you're in that stage where you are trying your absolute hardest, like, to balance two things at that level, you're only going to be doing, like, okay, so your total output's 100 is hypothetically 100%, but it's like you're going to be doing 45% on both if you're firing perfectly. Yeah. You'll never be truly maximizing either of them. And it just sort of...
Something has to take a backseat. Yeah. Whether it was emails for the company or me shopping for my brand, you know, like, something always gets pushed around.
Yeah.
Nothing's deadline, you know, like... Yeah, things get back burner.
Can I play devil's advocate to that a tiny bit? Asking, been thinking a ton about frameworks lately, and like when you're in a certain framework,
he's trying to build a house.
But you can get, like, if somebody came in and like put a gun to my head and told me to do almost anything,
pick a framework,
or they're gonna come back and kill me. Like, guess what? That bandwidth that we talk about, like, it's fixed. Well, that thing's gonna get opened up real quick, and I'm gonna be able to do an incredible amount of stuff because somebody threatened my life for that. I'm just really curious if once you did leave High Roller, did you find that extra time that you had was like linearly made the business that much better? You know what I mean? When you look back and say you can't believe you were doing both, do you see it actually, that extra time helping that much for the business?
I don't see it as much as the time, as much as it's my own mental health is really what it was. Cause High Roller was a weekend based, like everything I did was on a Friday, a Saturday, or Sunday.
Yeah.
And then I'd squeeze mentation in Monday through Thursday. So it really was like, and I had my son every Wednesday.
Yeah.
And that was super important to me. Like, what's the point of having a job or being in a position that I can make my own schedule if I don't make time for my kids? And so I knew I was going to be gone every weekend when he wasn't at school. You know, he would just be with his mother. So I was like, I need to set aside one day a week where I can have my child for the whole day. No work obligations, no nothing. And that's still important to me today. We still do it. We spend every Wednesday together.
Yeah. And also to be just to, for your own sake, it might sound kind of like you're a distant dad that lives off. You're a very active father.
Oh, my wife and I are happily married. I only get my kid one day.
Talking about a day where it's only kids.
Growing up, my dad was a chef. He worked weekends, and it was kind of the same deal. Like, we didn't go to camp on Wednesdays. If it was school vacation week on a Wednesday, like, that was always our dad day. And to me, that was so special. Like, those were the coolest best day. So I was like,
hell yeah,
I want to be, what's the point of running your own business if you can't do things,
if you
like
can't
that?
Shape your own life.
Exactly. Yeah. And especially more so then, because I knew I was working every weekend. That was like the main reason why I did it. But the biggest thing about leaving the job and just doing me was that I got more time with my family, which then made my mental health better. Because it's like, you know, I feel bad for my wife. I'm gone to, you know, Virginia or California, whatever, 3-4 days at a time, and then I come back and I have all this garden work to catch up. This other planning. I have to get my packaging ordered. I have to fill all these different orders. So it's like, it was just go, and now it's like, okay, I can have a Saturday and a Sunday off, and I can spend with my family, and I can get that mental break to go into Monday feeling fresh, which I feel like for a year I was running on fumes. I never got that reset.
Yeah.
You know, there was the Wednesday reset with my son, but like, ask anyone who's dealt with a toddler, like, it's not really a reset day. Like, we're active.
Yeah. And I think kind of what Matt was saying, because I've felt it a lot where like, you get so used to like, all the time is filled always.
Yeah.
With work mostly. So then, sometimes when then you do take that, a very reasonable step back into a more sustainable way. For me, usually when that's happened, it's been overwhelming's not the word, but it's like, it takes a while to catch up to being able to actually like utilize the sort of the newfound time appropriately. Like, that's always been kind of bumpy for me. It seemed like it was a pretty smooth transition for you, though, the way you're talking.
I kind of just knew what I wanted. Like, yeah. I knew that I wanted weekends off of my family.
Yeah.
That was like where I was at. And it goes back to the like, got to work another Saturday, got to do another. Yeah. And with the COVID, all the years getting canceled, or at least the first summer that got canceled.
Cancel culture so far.
How it ended up being was, instead of just getting married on a Saturday, people who had to reschedule their wedding.
People were fucking doing Tuesday weddings.
So it was like Friday. It was like Thursday night rehearsal dinners because people are getting married on a Friday. And then it's like I'm working a Friday, Saturday, Sunday wedding some weekends. And it's like, it's a lot of planning, a lot of execution, and just exhaustion was really what it led to. And I would like, it sounds so stupid to say, but I would be like, I would do anything to just have a Sunday where I can go sit at the beach.
I think nothing about that sounds stupid to say.
But I mean, it's a thing that people who work a 9-to-5 experience every weekend. For me, it was like something that wasn't a possibility for the 4 years prior. Cause it's like service-based industry. You work the weekends.
Yep. Yeah.
My wife works a 9-to-5. So it's like, the crossover isn't great.
It's opposite. Yeah, yes, totally.
Just not great.
Can I ask, do you find that the time that you starting to realize all these questions are coming from a very personal place?
People I've talked to, they've said this. I'm just wondering.
Yeah, asking for a friend. But truly, do you find that with the making that clear decision, kind of listening to what you're feeling and acting on it, and do you find that with more time dedicated to yourself and to your family and things that you prioritize, do you find that time that you are locked in on work or mentation or it's like still you have the oyster thing going on, do you find that when you're locked in on those things that you are better or more effective or efficient in those times when the rest of your life is kind of happier, 100%. More dedicated
like a good
to
Sunday family day. Recharge, getting home at like 6 or 7, putting the kid down and being like, okay, planning to go on my week, not like getting home from a wedding at 11 to go to a 9 a.m. manager's meeting, you know, like,
yeah,
that was my life before. And then, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I play catch. It's just catch up was what it always felt like. It was always like I was a little bit behind, and now it's like I can finally get ahead of things.
Mm. Yep.
And for that, for me, like how my brain operates, like I need that. I need to be ahead of the curve. I can't be behind the ball, or I stress out, I get anxiety. It's, I think most people probably feel the same way.
But you're kind of, those things are, stress and anxiety are ineffective to
getting wears your job you down done. More than a job.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
I was getting into the same thing literally with this podcast. Cause I would kind of how that my schedule was, usually I would have the weekend to edit it. And then weekend that you're just not going to be sitting at your computer perfectly and making so like inevitably would bleed late into Sunday night when I should be doing getting ready for my week. Not trying to get like resentfully finish this thing.
And that's the resentment that it's like I mean, for you luckily it was yourself that you're having the resentment again. Like your own,
I could cancel
that,
it.
That's like what was starting to come with me. I'd be like, god damn it, I have to go do this other thing on Monday when I really would like to be able to get some me stuff done.
And all it was you know, just kind of it took me a while to recognize like, okay, I'm kind of operating handicapped a little. I'm handicapping myself by setting my week up in this way where this inevitably always dominates my Sunday. And so some changes, but it took me a long time to even like realize that and then address it. But again, when you step outside yourself a little bit, it's like, oh yeah, this is why I did this. Like to have the say in being able to manipulate this a little bit. Why am I not manipulating this a little bit?
But you feel better about it now?
Totally. Sundays are, it's totally my own fault if I'm at working on this at, you know, midnight on Sunday. Yeah. Well, Monday morning or whatever.
Yeah.
Just to shift it a little bit back, the one main thing I kind of wanted to just ask, think obviously, you know, I think of like how a brewery scales. Clearly there's been scaling to some degree for you guys. Does that mean more strains? Does that mean more formats, like whether it's distillate, concentrate, I know you have some the coolest gummies in the game. But yeah, talk about sort of what that looks like, and maybe if you can slap some numbers on it, just because for output, because I don't even know where to start.
In what your products are.
Yeah, we're definitely more strains. I spent the whole last year popping seeds, digging through. I probably have gone through 15 packs just this year, always trying to have something going, mm-hmm. finding new stuff. And people don't realize, I think we might have touched on like pheno hunting last episode.
Very
like,
interesting.
Yeah.
What really goes into finding a keeper cut. And like I've had
keeper cut, what a cool name.
I've had to be more picky than ever, especially with the market and the way everything's been going. There's no room in the market anymore for not the best. It used to be like you could get away with maybe the not best batch. Maybe you had to go down a 100 or 200 on your price or whatever. But like now it's like if it isn't top shelf, it's not going to move.
Yeah.
And the bills keep coming. And if it's not going out, then what was the point of growing it?
Yeah.
You know, what was the point of keeping it alive and keeping it healthy and doing everything right? If at the end of the day, when you've already spent all the money on the electric bill, the nutrients, the trimmer to trim it, the packaging to put it in, if it sits on the shelf, you're going to go out of business.
One way money is no good.
Yeah. You're going to go out. I spent the last year just popping seeds, trying to find the next best thing. And, I have 4 keeper cuts that I got from those, like I said, those 15 packs. A lot of duds, a lot of herms, a lot of just didn't check all the boxes. I thought the whole way through, this looks great. Early trichome production, insane nose, cut it down, dry it, smoke it. Don't like it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And it's like, it's tough when you put in all that time and energy. But again, it's like, if it's not the best. And I was talking with my employee about this the other day, like the stuff that I consider a throwaway now, me 5 years ago would have thought was like the best
shit you've ever touched.
But like you have to be that selective and picky.
That means you're on the exact doing it right.
Can you quantify how selective and picky? I remember you back then in that last episode saying something, I believe it was like out of 100 seeds, there might be one keeper and one good one. Does that still ring true?
Yeah. So the packs we've been going to, they're either like 10, 12 or 15 seed packs. Yeah.
And are these at a time. Each different types of seeds?
Yeah. So you'll buy these from a breeder.
Mm-hmm. With 15, like if it was hops, 15 different varieties of hops.
No, it's the same strain.
Okay. Okay.
But different phenotypes.
Can you give me a very quick refresher on that?
How I like to do it before is like your brother and you, same mom and dad, different people.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So same parents, but different characteristics.
Yep.
Different phenotypes are just the different traits that you picked up from the gene pool.
Yeah.
Along
the
way. So, you know, like you could have a brother that's 6'5" and you're 5'10". You know, like it's all, so plants grow from the same pack, grow differently. Some are purple, some are green, some have crazy resin production, some have a crazy nose, some smell like nothing.
Yeah.
So it's like you never really know what you're going to get. And then that goes into, are the seeds feminized or are they regular seeds that you have to sex test?
Yeah.
So like you pop 10, you could have 7 males.
Yeah.
So then it's like out of that 10 pack of seeds you bought, you only have 3 females to go through. And the likeliness of one of those being a keeper is like slim to none.
Yeah. And to get to that final answer of knowing whether it's a keeper or not, I'm trying to really kind of qualify. You have a seed. Until you plant it, you know nothing.
Nothing.
At every time.
And
right?
I stop then flowering seeds out. So when I pop a seed to, you know, see if it's going to have traits that I like.
Mm-hmm. A seed into soil. Is that kind
of
what?
You germinate it in, you know, a cup of water or paper towel or whatever. Yeah. And then from there, it will go into a cup of soil. Let it grow up. First of all, if it's a regular pack of seeds, you have to make sure that it's a female.
Yeah.
Which it will show its signs.
That's what
after so many weeks of vegetative state. But yeah, Pheno Express is a great tool because you don't have to wait for the veg time to get your plants big enough, especially when you're working within like the legal parameters of what is considered a seedling. What once it's over, you know, so many inches tall, it's considered a vegging plant, and then you have a cap on that. So it's like not like you can just have unlimited amounts of these things going. So it's like if you can expedite that process from basically like 5 to 7 days from germination. Wow. You can know if you have a male or a female. So like in terms of lighting, that costs money. Soil, nutrients, that all costs money. So being able to just get rid of your males from that point, you can streamline things a lot. So yes. Once it gets to the point I know I have a confirmed female, I'll let it grow big enough that I can take 2 clones off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll cut 2 clones because I'm never growing that seed again. I'm only ever growing a clone of that seed.
Sure.
So what's the point of seeing what that seed can do? It might have a characteristic or a trait that the clone doesn't have. Seeds are full of hormones. They might react completely differently than a clone that was produced in this environment. You know, like just a completely different set of variables. So for the fact that I'm never growing that seed again, I'm only ever going to be taking it from a cut. I flower the cut out first time every time now.
Interesting.
Just because that's what's going to be in the stable for, you know, eternity possibly. So the whole just running a seed to me is a waste of time.
Yeah.
And I do want to get back to sort of the scaling part. I know that's a piece of it. Yeah,
we can get there for sure.
No. And it sounds almost like when you say in the bank or however you use it, it almost seems like yeast strain is then how like you reuse the yeast. Yeah. And there's going to be drift if you're not careful. Mm-hmm. But it seems like I hate to keep jumping in with like, ooh, that seems like this, but you know, it's just how we're in a brewery, so I have the right. So you're talking, you would started talking about that because that was sort of one of the ways you had.
That's what I've been doing. You asked if I was getting more strains for production.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been popping seeds to try to, you know, bring more stuff in to the big house. You know, get it spot in a room where it will go to a store, go to production, go direct to consumer.
Yeah.
Where is the first round of a pheno hunt? I usually that goes to like me and my inner circle. Try this out. Tell what me do what you think?
Homebrew.
Grind this ounce up. Do you find seeds in it? You know, like things I want to know before it's on a shelf.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the customer to tell me that, hey, this had a pot of seeds all through it. Because sometimes you think everything looks great, and then there's like a herm that you don't even know about.
Don't want to be reading that on Reddit.
Exactly. Fuck that. Yeah. Usually I'll flower stuff out in a 3-gallon pot, streamline it as fast as I can to get through the process to see what the end result is.
That's going
to
tell you if you're going to take that like clone, those clones.
So what goes along with that people don't realize is, while you're growing all these phenos to see what their end result is going to be, you have to keep a backup of that in veg.
Because in case it's good?
In case it's good. Because you want to be able to say, hey, okay, 10 more of those. And you have to be able to cut, you know, however many want you to fill a room or to fill a tray or to do whatever. So while you're looking through all, you know, however many different seeds you have going, you have to have backups going in your veg.
For every single one.
Which takes up a lot of space, a lot of time, a lot of nutrients, it's really just like, for something that could potentially just go in the trash.
Yeah.
It's a lot of square footage that it really takes up. A lot of real estate in a place that, you know, you don't normally have much extra real estate to give.
Yeah.
So that's why people will take in cuts rather than pheno hunting, because they'll see the end result. They'll know that it's something they want to grow, and they'll ask whoever grew it or the breeder, do you have cuts of this? So you don't have to go through that process. But
are cuts essentially clones?
When you take in clones, you run the risk of what was in that person's facility that now is in your facility. Did they have bugs, powdery mildew, anything, you know, and the hop latent viroid? Like, is any of that stuff coming with that clone? So unless you have like a really good isolation and testing process, like I stopped taking in clones probably 2 or 3 years ago, just because I was like, I don't want to pick anything else up. And that's why I'd rather pop seeds and just test everything myself.
Yeah.
It's the harder route to go. It's the more brutal road to go for sure. But I can assure that I'm not taking, if I have pathogens or pests, it's on me.
Yeah.
It's because of
the 2 P's.
It's because of my neglect, not because I have someone else gave it to me.
Totally.
So I've been going through seeds, digging, trying to get stuff to add into the lineup. Found 4 this year.
So there's with 4, GMO, there's 5.
There's 7, because I got rid of 2. 2 that like I had thought checked the boxes the last 2 years, and I just decided, like, side by sides of some of the other stuff I had, I was like, these, they weren't moving as well. I'd have them on the menu. People weren't ordering them. And it was kind of like, maybe I'm just holding on to this for sentimental value.
Yeah.
Versus because I like
That's
it. Or it's easy to
be a Bucolia. Yeah,
or it's easy to grow. It doesn't take a lot of labor or maintenance. It just kind of does its thing. And then yeah. I can, I had to let go. Like, I had yeah. to, you know, throw some stuff away that, I was just emotionally attached.
It's surprisingly yeah. hard. Like, it's, yeah, oh yeah. It's odd. It's
terrible.
Like, I have this in here because it reflects my sensibilities yeah. as, like, so what does that say? Yeah.
And it's, like, with the specifics of phenotypes, like, you'll never see it again. Unless someone you directly know has that same exact cut, you could pop through another 100 seeds and you still wouldn't find one that's exactly the same.
And that's what that'd be the big difference. Like, if Noah could cut this beer out of the lineup,
but then he could brew it again.
If you wanted to make that beer again, you could brew it.
You could buy the ingredients that went into that beer. When you throw a strain away, you could go through 1,000 seeds
forever.
Again, yeah, and never find that with the exact characteristics of that one cut.
It sounds to me like if, like, every new beer we had to wild capture yeast,
yeah,
like, and culture it up, and because then there's this waiting game where, when you said the space growing, that was immediately what I thought of. Like, we have space, thankfully, and it's a much smaller, like, percentage of the footprint. But in this fall, I think we started with 16 or 20 jars from different employees' houses, basically. Yeah. And then that takes time, and then you have to kind of select from that, make that bigger, so then it's a bigger footprint of less amounts. And yeah, just it, I can feel for that time, because that's exactly what it sounds like if we had to do that every time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, all right, get a new beer coming, get the jars out.
And that's why like keeping and protecting your mother's is so crucial. Like, having a good, clean environment.
Whether you're talking about weed or anything.
Yeah.
Tupac
protect
said it,
the mothers.
Yeah. Tupac said it best.
Yeah, protect your mamas. But yeah, there's places now that will do backups of, like, tissue culture. So if you did get any pathogens.
Like a yeast bank.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If you got any pathogens or anything that might have, like, ruined your crop, they can take a tissue culture and grow it back for you.
Wow. Tissue.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so it's very expensive.
Yeah.
But they can keep it in a bank for you as well. So yeah. It's like, if you know you have a winner,
yeah.
You know your bread and butter. Like, if you could clone Subby, I suppose, yeah. And put it in a vault somewhere, yeah. That if anything ever bad happened,
right.
You could call them up and yeah. Be like, I need that back.
It's incredible. The Subby mother.
But yeah, we're not at that point yet, but I'll definitely start backing some of my stuff up with tissue culture, just with, like, everything that's going around. It's like, yeah. you got to protect what's selling and what's making yeah. You money. But to get back to scaling, yeah, I'm trying to not.
Can
be
I ask you a quick question about it? When you so you said you have 7 strains now. Again, trying to force the beer thing in, but I think it probably makes sense where you know, GMO is what we talked about a lot last time. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, at least was your signature. I would assume it's our flagship.
Yes. Yeah, it's like,
that's the Subby of mentation.
Yeah, I feel like weird saying it's our flagship because I didn't breed it. You know, like, it wasn't a creation that I made.
Well, we spent the last 90 minutes talking about the
what goes
million
into selecting it.
Yeah. Yeah, all the minutia that gets you to the point of that. So I think you're cool there. But do you try to, like Justin today, I'm asked me on my way out, like, any way we can get a dark beer on as a menu balancer. So, like, GMO is a real heavy hitter. For me, frankly, like, unless it's literally bedtime,
yeah.
it's too much yeah. for me. The flavor's great, but yeah, wax me. So do you try to, like, hit sort of like these different pockets of
absolutely
menu balance, yeah. basically?
And that's why I've been popping so much, because, like, I want to have a sativa. I want to have a hybrid. I want mm-hmm. to have what every corner of the market could want. You know, I don't want to be the one hit wonder. I want to
yeah.
show people that I can do different varieties well, and not
is it
just
like
one
beer
thing.
Though, where, like, because of course, like, any creative person that's making something wants that. Like, you're drinking a lager, like, people were anything that wasn't an IPA, and still I think to this day it's met with it's a certain type of skepticism, because it's like, oh, that's not, if it wasn't an IPA, it was a lot harder to get people interested. And I think then there was a skepticism, like, it's probably not going to be that good because they do IPAs. Do you see that
absolutely. Like, there's people who have had the GMO or have had whatever, and like anything new on the menu, like, they know the quality that they can expect from my product, but they maybe don't want the same thing again. You know, people, the varieties of spice of life, people want something new. And like,
sometimes I wonder, I think that, but then when how people behave, you look at the numbers, it shows that that's not how actually
everyone's a creature
act.
Of habit.
That's really interesting. Right.
It's a great
that's why
saying.
It's the spice of life, because the
everyone
few
wants
can do it.
Something
it's
new,
like the
but
Dune
they really
spice.
Like,
it's what the spice you want but can't get.
The way you just popped that in, right? It's the spice of life. That's gonna be the cut this week.
But no, absolutely. And like, for just me personally, like, I don't want, like I said, I don't want to just be known for one thing. I want to show, just like with you, I'm sure how you went with the lager program. You're like, I can brew more than a New England style.
Oh, right. You want a website. Like,
fuck.
Right.
Like,
and I probably, like, for other stuff, you probably almost put in almost a overcompensation effort to prove that. Yeah. That's interesting that it seems like a pretty close parallel.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
That.
But no, I want to have something for everyone. You know, like you example, it's too much. Some you can't smoke it all day long sometimes. Sometimes you need like the lighter morning smoke or the heavier bedtime smoke or the pain relieving smoke or the party smoke. You know, like there's
a lot of strain
for every there's a strain for every time in life. So that's why we've been popping seeds and going through everything. Now where we're at, it's our new facility has two flower rooms. Doesn't sound that crazy, but big upgrade for us from what we came through. We basically quadrupled our footprint.
Oh, hell yeah.
And is that pretty linearly quadruple potential output too?
How production schedule work, it's a 3x. It's not quite a 4x.
Gotcha. But 3x is 3x.
And that's staying within state regulations.
Parameters.
Of my canopy that I'm allowed. If I basically run a 20-ish or say the harvest schedule by 4, then there always leaves a row that's either just starting, which can be considered vegetative, or is ready to come down.
Cool.
So it keeps me within those legal parameters that too. But yeah, we're just getting started. We're like 22 or 23 days in on our first round in the new house. Not new house, the new warehouse. I call it new house. But
there is a house there.
Yeah, the big house, I guess you could say. So yeah, just trying to have variety and, you know, again, not be the one hit wonder and show other people or not other people, but show people that we have other strengths and other strains that can stand up to what we've been known for with the GMO or known for with anything else.
How does that apply with like formats? I said, visually, your gummies are as cool as anyone's ever seen. But then with concentrates and stuff, even if it was just a breakdown for you guys of like what the end form generally ends up being.
So there's a lot of things that are I don't know if byproduct is the right word, but there's things that obviously aren't top shelf that you don't want to necessarily send to market.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I have my live rosin made, there's the outskirts of those washes that, you know, maybe isn't exactly what you want in your jar at the end of the day. Still a great product, still has a smell, still probably has very similar THC content, but it's not the most appealing. Still will get you high. Still has plenty of all the right stuff in it. So that's what then will get sent to the kitchen. That's the stuff that'll get made. And so I guess it's a byproduct. I guess
absolutely is.
But that's the stuff that'll go into the edibles. You know, it's not the most visually appealing.
Yeah.
But it still packs a punch.
Yep.
So that goes in there. And then it's like the trim and the lowers from all of the cured and finished stuff. That's what I'll make into our batters and our diamonds. And
that's literally that lower stuff. Flowers.
Just the stuff that's lower in the canopy that doesn't get the devoted sunlight that the tops do. Mm-hmm. So they don't swell up. They're not as dense. It's not like an ideal nut. Like when people open a jar, it's only an eighth in there. So it's like you only have so many grams.
There's like four.
Yeah, you only have so many grams to make people be like, nice.
Damn.
Yeah. And like that's what I always tell people that help me out with packaging. I'm like, how would you want your eighth to look? Do it like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like the easiest way. It's like, oh, okay, I want like one nice big nug and maybe like two medium smaller nugs, you know? So it's like, okay, you try to put like a half eighth in there and then like 2 gram nugs or so.
Yeah.
And that's like kind of the formula that I stick to when I do that. But obviously there's the odds and ends of that. You get done packaging a pound or whatever and you have the little popcorn that you're like, I'm not going to throw that in there. So it's like, that's what goes and gets turned into the batters and the diamonds and the sauces and all the other stuff. But for breakdown wise, it's definitely probably like 80, maybe even 90% flour sales.
Wow. That's definitely a lot higher than I would expect nowadays.
Just because that's like the bulk and like everything else is kind of the odds and ends.
Huh. Wow. And it probably, like, I would assume that's, you get better margins on that because it's just, you're removing one other step.
There's no other processing.
Yeah. I mean, you don't get the same price tag that you can get if it's the top shelf flour going out, but it's better than throwing it away, you know? Like,
oh, I mean, flour would be what you'd always want because
Exactly. Everything else takes a hit.
And then you're paying someone or you're just labor of your own.
I don't do any extraction or have a kitchen or anything like that. So yeah, that's all outsourced. So obviously that costs money to do it all too.
Yep. Well, I know nothing about this industry beyond the probably 3 hours we've spent talking about it, but it seems like that percentage, if that's what that's probably a very enviable percentage, I'd imagine. Yeah,
and it's really just like, it's a nice menu expander, you know, like it's a good add-on.
Yeah.
It's like people come for the flour and then they're like, oh, you have a batter, cartridges, or you have pre-rolls, you have gummies. Like it's the when you're at the gas station checking
out.
Like
an auxiliary buy.
Yeah, it's not the $200 and whatever ounce. It's the 10, the 20, the 30. It's the add-on items. And it's like helps move through inventory. Or maybe people come for that and they're like, oh, you also have rosin or you have flour as well. I was just going to get some gummies, but it's just having an expanded menu to reach what everyone wants is really what it is.
What part of the flour becomes distillate that then ends up in
ganja? I don't make any distillate products. If I'm being honest, I don't like distillate myself. I
heard that.
I do make live resin cartridges. All of our gummies are live rosin gummies. So ice water extraction pressed out through some heat plates, and then that goes right to the kitchen. They decarb it, which activates the THC.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get baked right in. Shout out Lakine for helping us out with all of that.
Cool.
In a serious sense, is there any place, space, or product that you can see yourself being in or want to be in that you guys haven't been in yet?
Cartridges are like the thing that we're breaking into now. Mm-hmm. I just dropped a bunch of stuff off the green truck to get turned into our first rosin cartridge.
Hell yeah.
We'll see how those go. It's a working man smoke, you know? It's like an on the go. Everyone has a job where they're able to stink like a backwood, you know? Like
some probably people, safe to say most people.
Yeah. Some people
rip GMO and function.
Some people want to be baked shift. And keep it discreet. And I feel like the cartridge is like the ideal way to do that. It's just a lower price point item too. So, you know, it's... You don't have to spend the $60, $70, $80 on a gram of rosin. You can spend the $30 to $40 and have a rosin cartridge that arguably will get you as many hits, you know, but for a lower price point.
Is it more processing for you to get to that lower price point? Like more cost for you?
I have to have the rosin processed.
Yeah.
And then I have to bring it to another person who then processes it and packages it into cartridges. That's just because who I've chosen to work with. Mm-hmm. There's one-stop shops throughout the market, but I have my relationships that I'd rather not steamroll through anyone that I've built good working relationships with, you know, like everyone can eat. There's enough out there for everybody. So
amazing.
Hell yeah, man. I could go on, and I'm sure I will after we shut this down a little bit. But anything else big that you wanted to hit, man?
What's up with the oysters?
Oysters are cruising.
Cruising.
Yeah.
What's time? I know that's a very front loaded process. Year will be, right?
Yeah.
And that's the Keystone. Just to be clear, episode I don't know. It's an episode.
Yeah. Shout out Jake.
Yeah.
Shout out the whole team.
And Baxter.
Yeah. Shout out the whole team behind that.
It's the whole crew.
We're not involved financially, just to clear that up.
Disclaimer. No, that's cruising along. But yeah, it's like almost 3 years until you have something that's really ready to take to market.
Yeah.
We'll check back also, in next year.
Yeah, maybe next season. We'll see.
So they're just little...
They're mediums.
But
that's progress.
Yeah.
That was
similar to cannabis, that they start from seed.
Yeah.
All the extra room that we have on the new farm we just bought, it's like screaming
oyster farm.
Screaming. No, the farm we bought to grow. There's a few other buildings on the property that they're just screaming aquaculture. So.
Yeah, man.
And I really need to have, you guys should have a marine biologist on the pod.
I would love to.
And then maybe,
you know, George Costanza.
And then maybe I could pick their brain.
I actually know it really.
Get the intro, because there's any marine biologists out there that are
in. Is anyone a marine biologist?
I know a very good one, I think.
Well.
I need to pick someone's brain. I don't have quite.
In the cannabis industry, it's all about proof. It's all about showing. It's all about, so. You know, give me that pudding and let's do it.
I'll bring some pudding.
Yeah. Okay. That would be fucking sick. I mean, and unheard of, I would imagine, too, to have those two things meet in Green Maine. Fucking love it.
They go more hand in hand than you'd think. A lot of the fertilizers and stuff are fish byproducts.
Interesting.
Yeah. A lot of organic fertilizers are fish shit.
Wow.
Or, you know, so I feel like there'd be cross applications.
That'd
for
be
the
so cool.
Industries.
Wow. Cool.
Fucking right. Well, cool. We're winding it down and talking like we're done, but you've been here once before.
Yeah, you know,
I know
deal.
What's to come.
You know that we're not done. We don't have to give you the whole rundown.
Yeah.
Noah, give it to him.
I think we did bands, I think last time. So you had mentioned you had just purchased some mini bikes today. And that reminded me that I don't know if you still are, but you used to be known to be riding your Harley.
Yeah.
So motorcycle man, at least in part. So I'm going to give you three brands of motorcycle and pair them each with three of your seven or any strain you've worked with, I'll say. Mm-hmm. So obviously we got to go Harley.
Yeah.
BMW seems kind of like the closest parallel in that world. I don't know clearly. And then way off that path, let's go Ducati.
Okay. Okay.
He can work with that.
I can work with these for sure.
Hey, Travis, can you just move your hand? Sorry, brother.
Sorry. We can start with Harley, the hardest hitting bike out there, probably the loudest, the most aggressive in your face bike. That has to be GMO.
Boom.
Yeah. Easy.
Gotta do that. Going to BMW, more so known as like a touring bike.
Yeah.
Big time.
A long haul. Not like GMO, something that would put you down. You know, something more.
Something
that,
more for me.
Yeah.
Something that Colin from Weld Works would ride down the coast of South America.
We have a strain called Fruit Stripe going, and that's like a more fruity, sativa-based. Keeps you a little more fluttery, a little more on your toes. Definitely not as much sedative effects.
Does the high last more than 7 seconds?
Yeah, absolutely.
No. So not zebra stripe, fruit stripe.
Fruit stripe,
I like it.
Yeah. That would probably have to go with BMW. More of like an all-day touring, can take it out for a long cruise and isn't going to be as aggressive as maybe a Harley Davidson.
Hell yeah.
And then...
Speaking my language.
Ducati, flashier Italian bike... Definitely more of like the designer of the bike world. We have the new strain that I'm really excited to put to market called Watermelon Tourmaline. Very hype collab in its breeding.
Who? Cool.
Process. Like a lot.
I don't know why. I meant to say cool.
A lot of hype around it. I've never gotten seeds in this packaging. Like the branding and everything around it. And then cool. I.
Hype collabs.
I'm going to say who. When you say collab.
Raw and Blackleaf.
You know who they are.
I know
brands.
Who Raw is.
Yeah.
We're talking Raw.
No. Raw Genetics. So different than the rolling paper.
expanding the portfolio.
But it's like when I say it checks all the boxes, it is like if there was a designer cut that we have, that's going to be it. So that would have to go with Ducati. Like,
cool. Watermelon Tourmaline.
What a wild name.
Even.
It's good.
So it's the two strains are Dirty Sprite and Fruity Pebbles.
Wow.
Crossed together.
Hoorah.
Yeah, you guys will see that. It's done testing. It's going to make its way into the big house, and hopefully like a New Year's release is what we're shooting for now. That's how long it will take to get it.
That's wild.
So yeah, from where it is now to like into people's hands is like probably by New Year's.
Wow.
That's incredible.
And I guess just super, super quick, this is not Instagram. So if people want Mentation, where do you think the most streamlined way to find out how they would
search
acquire?
Us on Weed Maps. That'll tell you any of the people that we're working with. Right now, it's Mentation Cannabis 3.0 on
might
Instagram.
Be four, might be
3.5 or 4. Usually, if you search it, whatever page will come out. Yeah. Don't be hesitant to try to reach out direct through a DM.
Yeah.
I answer all DMs personally.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, Weed Maps is probably your best bet. That's not getting taken down.
Cool.
And shops are pretty good about updating their inventory daily on that.
Cool. And the days of DM of a direct sale, those are over.
No, not at all.
Okay,
no.
So yeah. That could be if you're a medical
patient. Alive and
patient, well.
Yeah. If you have your credentials, you can send them through, and I'll send you the menu, and we can figure out a nice parking lot to meet at.
Cool.
Meet you to 7-Eleven, baby, like the old days.
Yeah. Cool. I love it, man. This was awesome I fully expected. It's just it's really just inspiring to see anyone make shit happen in the way, especially with you and Baxter, you're making a lot of different shit happen, but just seeing how much has happened for you in particular in the last 15 months is frankly just wild from any vantage.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Whenever someone says I'm proud, that makes it seem like I had anything to do, and it's not that, but just as a friend of yours, you have that pride of like, fuck yeah, dude.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate that. For
and
real,
I'm
though.
Sure in another 15 months, I'll feel even more of it. So yeah. Okay. Trevor Stone, thanks so much, man.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, brother.
I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. Lord, all of a sudden, it will all become lovely. The flower that opens.